The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to another edition of The Story Behind the Story. I'm your host, Dr. H. Ruat. Thanks for joining us tonight. Yeah, you know, we are going to strip the gears off the machine and do the best we can to expose the fraud, the machinations that have happened in it. Whether you know it or not, ladies and gentlemen, you have been swindled. You have been robbed. We're going to expose it tonight, and we're going to do our best to light a fire and tell you, listen, you don't need to sit back and do nothing. If you're complicit, they win. Or if you're quiet, you become complicit and they win. You've got to stand up and be counted. We're going to have a great show tonight. Thanks for joining us. As always, need to do some house cleaning. Golly, we've got our full team here with us. So, James, how are you doing?
Hey, doctor, I am here and I am doing. I'm actually doing better. Now that I finally have figured out that it actually was the CIA that was attacking me off and on since 2019, I'm doing way better because I'm able to reconcile some of the weirdo things that happened to me since then. And Candace Owens coming out and talking like she's talking now. Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, we always knew that. I mean, with the fusion centers and Homeland Security and all that nonsense, you know, when anybody that wants to speak the truth, especially this radio show, we flat out get focused on. And I keep saying you don't have any flack coming up if you're a bomber and if you're over the target.
I hear. So I'm all for pushing for voting harder this fall and we keep an honest government.
Well, it's a war, it's a battle, and it can be won. Our only really hope is to tell the truth and spur a quiet, hopefully peaceful revolution. We are not about violence, we're not about bloodshed, but sometimes you have to be defensive sometimes, okay? So anyway,
I said the exact same thing today, doctor, to someone else. They're like, hey, you know, we got to get out there and start busting heads and shooting things up. Well, who are you going to shoot? Nobody. You're going to shoot the Episcopalians and the Mormons? No.
That's what they want us to do.
We're not going to do that. We just have to vote harder and demonstrate peacefully.
And we have to be alert and aware and knowledgeable, which is what we do on this radio show. Welcome to all of our listeners in the Pacific Rim. We sure appreciate your coming forth. And we have with us again also, are you stateside, James?
I sure am. I am in sunny California. And what a beautiful day it was. I went for a motorcycle ride today. It was like 60 degrees out. It's like, wow.
Well, we're still here freezing and getting snow on the ground here in Utah. I'm about ready to head down your way. Hey,
you come visit any time. Open door.
Okay. Welcome. We'll do that. So how's our friends in the Philippine Islands?
It's high tide and sunny skies over here, True. And we're being far from quiet.
You guys are just making me feel really, really homesick to get out and get some sun, get some vitamin D soaking up. So, golly, yeah, we've got a fantastic guest tonight. I tell you, I met Sari. Now, Sari, are you with us? Are you? I am.
Good?
Thanks for joining us tonight. Thank you for joining. I know it's late where you are. Phoenix is still 8 o'clock, isn't it?
Correct.
So we're on the same time frame. Well, Utah's idiocy will move forward, you know, spring forward, and get the whole biorhythm thing messed up here pretty quick. But thanks so much for joining us, Sari. Let me just jump right in and give our listeners a little bit of explanation and introduction as to who you are. I don't want to mispronounce your last name. Is it Pawacik?
Close. Yeah, Pawacik.
Pawacik. Yeah, sick, not check. Okay,
right.
Sick. You're an incredible storyteller. I had the distinct pleasure and privilege of meeting you. Golly, it's been about when was it? The spring of this year, of last year actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, we went out to dinner. Well, had a great time.
We did, but you are a much better storyteller than I am.
I am a storyteller, but my wife, bless her heart, says sometimes I have diarrhea of the mouth and constipation of the brain. And she should know.
She knows you well.
She does. And so I say, she keeps telling me, she says, you need to just listen sometimes. And I try and do that. But I have a lot of, you know, people to talk to and a lot of things to say myself. So thanks for being the guest on the show tonight. We're going to hit some hard topics, and I'm just going to try and just let you take and explain, you know, what you think is the most important message for the entire world. You have a bully pulpit tonight. We have a lot of people listening. We don't know exactly how many, but we do have quite an audience in the Pacific Rim countries. We have the Goldwater Network with Kevin, a.k.a. Major Burdock, there in Manila. He just chimed in. It's a beautiful day. And then it's Saturday about, 10 o'clock there, Kevin?
Yeah, it is. And I'm a little bit south, islands further south. But
okay. Yeah, you vacated. Yeah, that's good stuff. All right. Let me just start this up. Sari, you are a market analyst and an analyzer for your company called ITM Trading.
I work with them.
Yes. So tell me how you got involved and what the company does and what your main focus is, just real briefly. Go ahead.
Well, I got involved because my business was actually chosen to fail. And I never understood that till I came to ITM Trading. So I had a small retail store, toy store, which is why I love stories. And we went bankrupt in 2018. I came to ITM Trading in 2017. And our focus is really to help people keep the wealth that they have earned. And we do that using a strategy, using gold and silver, precious metals.
That's pretty much it. It says it all right there. We're done. Let's all go home happy. No, big time story. I called you. You called me. I sent you an email. You were very rapid to answer early this morning. Thank you for that. Because you know your sister Lynette is an amazing, you know, you're an amazing woman too. Lynette has done an amazing job with videos explaining this entire debacle that's unfolding before us. And we spoke briefly this morning, and then I said, would you be free, you and Lynette, to come on the show tonight? And Lynette is an early riser and an early sleeper. She's early to bed, early to rise, and she is wealthy and wise. And you're more of a nighthawk, so you volunteered. So thank you for that. I got to tell you, Sari, I was privileged to, I think you set it up, if I'm not mistaken, with a video interview that Lynette did with me a while back now. It's been a year and a half, I think, mm-hmm. about my experience with Paul Volcker in 1984 back in New York City. And I got to tell you, it was a privilege and pleasure to talk with Lynette. And we were definitely, to use a term, kindred spirits. I mean, it was so fun talking with her because she was like, right. I very rarely have someone that I can talk to who knows the depths of the conversation that I can. I talk with so many people and they have no understanding of what I deem to be extremely serious business. And Lynette was far and beyond that. She was such a joy to talk with. I got to tell you that. And I look forward to maybe doing an interview with her and taping it and recording it for the future. Because what you sent out, and I just got it this morning, you might have sent it out yesterday, is the simply titled, the email was expiration date. And I clicked on that and I said, oh my gosh, yes. You know, we have expiration dates in most everything that's perishable, right?
You
have food that goes bad, no matter how much preservatives they go in, it exceeds the best use by date. It's expired. Throw it out. Get something fresh. Sari, the situation is every single fiat currency. You know, a fiat is not just a really cheap, bad car. Fiat literally means something that is by government decree. A government says so it must be true. That's what fiat literally, it's an Italian Latin term, right? This means by government decree. So fiat currency is only valuable because the government says it is. It's a piece of paper. That the point is, every fiat currency since the history of paper money began has ended up with an expiration date. It has expired. Its usefulness is over. It's got a life cycle. So that said, here is three excellent videos that Lynette put out, and you're explaining to people as well, showing why our Federal Reserve note has expired. Its usefulness has expired. Go ahead and tell us why. Just start from the beginning and run with it. The story, well, the story time is yours.
The story time goes back to 1913 when the Federal Reserve was created. Same year that the IRS was created. Slight coincidence. And they issued fiat, but they were called gold certificates and silver certificates. The idea was to get people used to handling paper money versus jingling coins in their pocket that were heavy. I mean, my goodness, very heavy, really. And so the government, their hands were tied. When we're on a gold-backed system, they can only do as much as gold that they have. They can't go into debt, really. And if you, as a citizen of the United States, didn't like what the government was doing, you could take your gold certificate into the bank and walk out with the physical gold, which constricted their budgets even more. So in 1933, after the World War I, we had the Great Depression. People were scared. They were starving. There was actually a global depression at that time. And in 1933, Roosevelt came out with Executive Order 6102, which called upon all good citizens to do their patriotic duty and turn in their money. But interestingly enough, and I can't prove it, when you look at the big picture, somehow the wealthy knew to get their gold out of the country into Europe. Hmm. So you and I, as good citizens, turned in our gold, and we were allowed to keep 5 ounces. Well, normal citizens need that 5 ounces of gold to live on. So as we spent our gold, it went into the banking system, never to come out again. Sort of like the $100,000 bill, the $10,000 bill, the $5,000 bill, $1,000 bill, $500 bill. Bet you the $100 bill is going to be next. So as the gold came out of the public, we were given fiat. Well, the real plan was to get real wealth out of the hands of the citizens, because as we're holding real gold, they really couldn't control us. They could not control inflation. They could not rob us of our purchasing power. With fiat, they could, because once the executive order 6102 came into play, we had 3 weeks to turn in our gold. Anything above 5 ounces was illegal. And they paid us $20.67 for every $20 in certificates and gold that we sent in. And that was great for a while. That was a lot of money in 33, so people felt more comfortable. But a few months later, they reset to get out of debt the gold from $20.67 to $35 an ounce. That was a huge wealth transfer from us to them. We lost 42% of the purchasing power of our money, but the Federal Reserve, the private bank, had a 60% increase in holdings. I'd say we were really scammed.
And that was just in 1933. I got to tell you, I had a really interesting conversation. He may be listening tonight. If so, I give a shout out to Eric from Southern Florida. He called me. He actually watched the video, a presentation I did of the Volcker experience in 1984, and he had some comments on it and some questions. He provides basically mortgages. He's a mortgage broker. And we had a great conversation. And see, what you just said right there was so true. He knew this, what happened under FDR in 1933, but in my research, I have an unpublished book, an unpublished manuscript, where I documented this, Sari, because I want to get your take on it, your opinion. That there's an author that I interviewed on this show a number of years ago, Anthony Sutton, and there's other authors who basically have documented in book form. His book is called The Secret Backers of Hitler. And he documents that in the year 1933 and into 1934, massive amounts of actual money in the form of gold was transferred to Germany, and that's what fueled the rise of Adolf Hitler and his rise to power in the latter part of the 1930s. And I made the point to Eric. I said, think about it. You really can't build a war machine like the Luftwaffe, the airplanes, the bombers, the panzer divisions, the destroyers, the submarines of the Third Reich's Navy. You can't do that with paper. You can't do that with hyperinflated German marks, which was experienced during the 1920s. Incredible hyperinflation in Germany's Weimar Republic. Now, Eric said, oh my goodness. You see, when you have war, especially if you're the leading power of the so-called allies, you suddenly have ability to make your fiat currency go from really just meaningless paper into military script. And that's exactly what happened at the end of World War II. And well, that ain't concluded yet. We're still mopping up in Germany. And Bretton Woods conference happened. Tell us about Bretton Woods. What happened there?
You're asking me about very particulars. And to tell you the truth, right now I can't remember. It's been a very long day.
Okay.
So give me... So you talk about Bretton Woods. Remember, I told you I'm a good storyteller.
You are.
And
you're
therefore,
fantastic.
Therefore, sometimes I don't, I'm not great with details. Lynette is the detail person. I'm the story person.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Bretton Woods basically is where the leaders of the so-called free world, the Allies, met here in a summit conference, and they determined that the United States Federal Reserve dollar note would become, quote, the world's reserve currency. Before Bretton Woods, the British pound sterling was the world's reserve currency, but it took a second seat to the Federal Reserve note, the FRN, which is called the United States paper dollar now. Now, when that happened, and it was, you know, the Japanese were still fighting on in the South Pacific, and total surrender didn't happen for about another year, but the machinations were done where the United States fiat currency called the Federal Reserve Note became basically military script to basically take care of war damages and war reparations. And that's when the debt cycle began, ladies and gentlemen. Because suddenly the United States dollar, which was used to be backed, as Sari said, in 1913, these were originally gold certificates. You take your gold certificate in and you get the exact amount of gold out. It was just a marker. I like to say it like this. You go into a fancy restaurant in New York City and it's 20 degrees outside, and your sweetheart has a really nice fur coat, and you have an overcoat on. So you walk into the upscale restaurant. They'll come in. They'll take your, in this case, maybe a $2,500 fur lined, or actually fur coat. They'll take that coat and give you a piece of paper, a marker for that, that say they have taken your specific coat, given you a number, and gentlemen, your trench coat that's just kind of bulky. You don't want to be sitting there at a nice table in an upscale restaurant. So they'll take your coat and put it away and give it on a special numbered slot. And when you get ready to go, you just come and give the maitre d' and they'll bring your coat out and help you in the coat. That's pretty neat in the upscale restaurants. So the paper currency at the time, the marker, 1913, was just that. If you have gold, you're a mink stole or a fur coat or an overcoat being held by an institution, you come in and you just exchange that marker. That's how it started. That's the story. That's the story behind the story to be told. But over time, after World War II concluded in Bretton Woods, you had 100 times more receipts for fur coats, and you had fur coats in the closet. That's the beginning of what we know now as fractional reserve banking. So, see how it, you know, it's like, okay, they want to boil the frog being the people, the free people of this republic, this United States of America. You don't take away the freedoms all at once. You don't march in with Panzer tanks, you know, and a fifth column and fight directly. You know, that'd be tough to do. You boil the frog by slowly raising the temperature in the water until the frog is paralyzed and can't get out, and the frog is boiled to death. This is what the process has been since 1913. And you said it so right, Sari. This Federal Reserve and the IRS formed at the same time in 1913, and they are not government agencies. if one thing people can understand from the show, the Federal Reserve is not federal at all, any more than
Federal
Express.
They chose the name specifically to confuse the public.
Yes.
By design.
Yes, exactly right. So you see how this is, you know, well, people hearing this might say, well, that's, is that just conspiracy theory? It's just, that's ancient history. It's 1913. What has that got to do with us today? So how would you answer that question?
Well, by design, they have led us down this path. They want to go into a new monetary system because our dollar really isn't healthy. I mean, I love when they say we have a strong dollar. Well, that means we can just buy more foreign goods than the foreigners can buy our goods, basically. But we don't have a strong dollar. The dollar is only as strong as what we can use our dollars to buy. And it's not much anymore. So there's a lot of different things that have to take place before we can go into a new system. But how, you know, take a look at our government. Take a look at the debt that our government is holding. They cannot pay it back. So they are going to have to start paying back as notes roll over. But our debt is growing mostly because of the interest. We can't catch up. So what are they going to do? What choices do they have?
Expiration date.
Exactly. But what's going to cause that expiration date? The one thing, if you read between the lines, they tell us what is happening. But most people do not understand that this is possibly planned. I mean, I don't have proof. And I don't get into conspiracy at all. My job is to help my clients keep what they've worked so hard for.
A store of value, which is really
exactly
what it's about. Yes.
But it doesn't have a store of value anymore. That's gone.
Yes.
Think about it. Everybody was taught to save. Save your money. When you retire, it will be there. Yeah, the dollars might be there if the stock market doesn't collapse. But how much do those dollars buy? When you put your first dollar in a 401k or an IRA in the 80s when they created them, your dollar bought a lot more than it does today. Think about what a $20 bill will buy you in the supermarket now. It might buy you one meal if you buy chopped meat. Might buy you one meal. But it doesn't buy much anymore. And that's because there's no value left in it. So the one thing, when I came to ITM, look, I taught kindergarten. I was a toy store owner. I wasn't paying attention to the economy. I had a sick child. I was trying to keep my business alive. 2008 was the beginning of the death knell, and it took 10 years for it to die. Was I paying attention to what was going out there? No, the Dow Jones was doing great. So if the Dow was doing great, life must be good for everybody but me. But when I came to ITM, you can learn. And believe me, there was so much thrown at me, it's like my head was spinning. That's why everybody said to me, do what you do best, be you. Well, being me is not knowing every little detail, but knowing the overall picture. And one day, I'm sitting with Lynette, and I'm, because I was brought in to take over her clients, and I'm sitting with Lynette, and she's looking at the Fed consumer purchasing power of the dollar. Have you ever really noticed the vertical side of that chart that shows you the value left in the dollar? Well, in June of 2018, they added a zero to that side. That was my paradigm shift. I'd been with ITM not even a year. It was 11 months almost to the day. And that zero was there, and it was all of a sudden a sucker punch. Oh, my goodness. They do tell us what we're going to do. We need to listen to their warnings. We need to listen to the fact that there's going to be food shortages. We need to prepare for that. That's what we're all about, is preparing for what might be coming down the pike. Protect yourself and those that are near and dear to you. Become part of a community. What can you do to protect yourself? That's what we talk about. And how are you going to do it? And with IPM Trading, we work with the little guys as well as the big guys, because everybody deserves to keep what's theirs.
Well,
and they're not done taking.
They're
not done taking yet.
No, you know, there's two opposites, and we've discussed this on the show a few times. We'll discuss it again tonight. There is, anyway, everybody knows what quantitative easing is. Most people may have forgotten about QE, quantitative easing. That's an Obama term, because the abomination said, we got this crisis. It's always an emergency. You know, we have this terrible emergency. We have these too big to fail institutions that we've got to bail them out through quantitative easing, which is simply another way of just printing up and making electronic entries into these big banks that have just took a bath because of subprime mortgages. And so trillions of dollars was brought out of thin air, literally, to prop up these too big to fail banks, supposedly. And so what happens next? What's the next
step? Imagine, Drew, let me ask you a question. Imagine if in 2008 they had given the banks the money but had said, for everybody that has a mortgage, we're going to give you $100,000. Take it off of their mortgage.
Yeah.
For those that do not have a mortgage, okay, what are we going to do? Help them get into a house, maybe. Imagine if they had done something for the public and not for the elite.
Exactly.
It might be very different today.
Trillions of dollars in quantitative easing went into the bank. The people have got us into the problem, and yet you're exactly right. I talked about this many times over the years on this radio show. What about the people that could be, you know, out of debt? What would that do to the economy as a whole? Well, they're not interested in that because it's a shell game. It's absolutely a confidence game, a con game. Let me just, we discussed this a little bit last week. I have in my hand here, and again, we're on radio, not video. This is a publication put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. It's called Modern Money Mechanics. And I opened this booklet up, and we see in the front page, this has been reprinted. Last time was in 1994. But the publisher's note explains this: the first edition was 1961. Now, I don't mind telling you, I was a toddler, you know, just starting to learn to walk in 1961, being born in 1959. But it lays it out so well because they just keep reprinting this. It first page explains what is money. Okay, the second page goes and says what makes money valuable. Well, here is the most salient paragraph you could ever read, really, to explain what's really going on here. And I quote, it says, in the United States, neither paper currency nor deposits have value as commodities. Now, notice what they just said under the heading, what makes money valuable. Now they say in the first paragraph, paper currency. Nor deposits have value as commodities. Well, why are we saying that paper currency is money? It says it right there, there is no value. Intrinsically, a dollar bill is just a piece of paper. I'm quoting from what they're saying here in the Federal Reserve's own publication. Again, A dollar bill is just a piece of paper. Deposits merely book entries. What then makes these instruments, checks, paper money? It's not money. It's currency. And coins, acceptable at their face value in payment of all debts and for all other monetary uses. I want to just scream this out to anybody that will listen. It doesn't matter if you're talking about United States dollars or whatever paper currency, if you're in the Philippine Islands, the peso, what have you. It's the same thing all across the board. Here it is, folks. Here is the big truth. And I quote, what makes this valuable? Mainly, it says, quote, it is the confidence people have that they will be able to exchange such, again, money, it's not money at all, it's currency, for other financial assets and for real goods and services whenever they choose to. So, see, real goods and services, I mean, things you can feel and touch and has intrinsic value, whether it's an apple or a nice juicy steak, or in the case of services, somebody to a mechanic to work on your vehicle. Those are real goods and services, right? But the only thing that makes this paper currency worth the thing is confidence. Well, what is the root term of a con man? Con is just simply confidence man. You're gonna scam somebody, like in the movie The Sting, right? You better have a really good facade to be able to get people to have confidence in your scam. Otherwise, it isn't going to work. They admit they're running a con game. You see. So let's just define currency, okay? Currency is something that, again, is, in this case, fiat. It's government decree. They're saying that, okay, here's a $1 bill, here's a $5 bill, here's a $10 bill. We're saying that even though there's the same amount of ink and the same amount of paper, we have a number on it of 1 and 5 and 10 and a 20 and 50 and 100, okay? So they say that it's worth that, so they decree it, and people have confidence that that's what it is because everybody's on the same page. So currency is defined simply as something that is divisible. It's called fungible, that it's the same value of numbers in everybody's pocket, and that it can be exchanged because of confidence. That's what the definition of currency is. But it's not money, because money has to be defined in Black's Law Dictionary legally as something that has a absolute store of value. Paper fiat currency, which is inflated, always has a problem with that. So it's not money. Money has to have a store of value, an intrinsic real store of value. Gold and silver has that. Our founding fathers understood that most important concept. And that's what they wrote and enshrined in our Constitution, Article 1, Section 8 and Section 10, which says there's nothing but gold and silver to basically erase debt, both public and or private. Nothing else does it. Trading a debt for another debt instrument, an IOU, which is all, again, going back to the claim check, that piece of paper that says you have a trench coat in the cloakroom is nothing but a piece of paper that'll hopefully give you the coat when you need to have it. It's not in and of itself any value. It's simply that. That's what you have to realize. And since 1933, ladies and gentlemen, and since Bretton Woods, when it went into literally military script, there is no value anymore in that. It was taken away. You can't turn it in for your fur coat. You just have a worthless piece of paper that's a confidence game because these guys have stolen your coat. They want you to believe that your coat is still there, but it isn't. It's gone. It's vamoosed. And you're out in the cold and you're shivering and shaking. That's the reality, folks. Is that enough of a story to tell, Sari? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got to let people know this has happened.
Yeah. But you have to understand that people still have confidence and faith in our government. And as long as people have that, they may know that something's off, but they still have confidence. And that's cognitive dissonance. They know
Absolutely.
It, they don't believe it, they don't understand it. That's why when I said in that June of 2018, I had that paradigm shift because I still, as much as I'm learning things, I still couldn't believe what I was learning. And everything they're doing is to keep up the illusion that the American dream still exists. But you have to listen to the World Economic Forum.
And others.
They say by 2013, yes, but they say by 2013 you will own nothing and be happy. 2030. By then you will own nothing and be happy. Well, I don't think I'd be happy if I didn't have anything that was mine or anything that I could share with my children and grandchildren. So I kind of say, well, by 2030, I will own a lot because I'm listening to what you're saying and watching what you're doing, and you won't be happy that I do own it. But the reason I say that is that there are ways to hold on to your wealth. There are things that you can do to protect yourself and protect your family, and you have to look at what they're doing. Because some people will have to survive. The only people that are going to lose are the people that are not listening, and they're going to lose by default. And they will have nobody to blame because the banks will say, hey, you didn't pay your mortgage. You were 6 months behind. Hey, I know you didn't have a mortgage, but you didn't pay your property tax. It's not my fault. You did it. You're the one that's in default. So you have to look around you and say, what can I do to keep in a good, solid position? You have to put on the worst case scenario. And that's really hard for me to do because my cup is always full. But you have to put on the worst-case scenario, and that worst-case scenario is we're Venezuela. We're a Zimbabwe. We're a Lebanon.
Or
if
Argentina.
That happens, what are we going to – how can we protect ourselves? Real money.
Yep. Actual money. Money, not currency. Yep.
And we have to look at the rules surrounding the different types of real money out there, because those rules are very, very clear. Can they change the rules? Yeah, they can. The question is, will they change the rules? Yeah, they will. And those rules will change to benefit those that are holding the right type of money. We can see it. There's just
okay.
little things going on.
We're gonna have. I'm gonna say something here that's going to be a. I mean, but I don't want to be crying fire in a crowded theater, Sari. But yet, if there is a fire, we better be yelling something, you know. Mm-hmm. And here's the bottom line. There is we experience the quantitative easing, the bailouts. What very few people are talking about is the other side of that ledger.
You mean the bail-in? that the FDIC just talked about,
yes,
that said, gee, those that need to know have their attorneys and their lawyers present. Let's see. Wasn't it in Lebanon that the Lebanese people were locked out of the banks, but those in the know were walking out with bags full of money from the banks? What happened in Cyprus right before the bail-in? Didn't Germany and France, all those banks that had money in the Cyprian banks, didn't they take their deposits out of those banks before the bail-in? So as the FDIC said in their meeting, the public should kind of know about a bail-in, but we really don't want to create a run on the banks. Mm-hmm. Those that need to know are here. And, oh, by the way, the public probably has more confidence in the banking system than us sitting in this room. That's the FDIC. That's our insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's our insurance.
Yeah, and we're talking about what insurance if there's a bail-in. Let's define what a bail-in. People might have say, well, what is that? It's imagine it's just the direct opposite of a bailout, ladies and gentlemen. And the law is, to save the institution, they have the authority now, the legality, to take your deposits. Instead of a government bailout, they're taking your money to survive the bail-in. Because,
well, wait a second. You used a very key word, and that was your money.
Right. It's not your money. Right. It's not.
Yep. You deposit money into the bank. You now become a creditor to the bank. You have agreed to loan your money to the bank. It is not yours. It is now theirs.
Your currency. Yes.
Exactly. You're right. Let's use the word currency. You have deposited your currency in there, and you have full faith that the bank is going to give it back to you when you are ready to use it. Well, if the bank is failing and they need those deposits, they will keep those deposits because they're theirs. But because of the laws of eminent domain, they have to give you something for it. So if it comes to that, they will probably give you shares in the failing institution. Now, the FDIC insures up to $250,000 per depositor. Okay, that sounds really good. So if there's two of you on the account, you can have $500,000. If there's one, you can have only $250,000. Anything above those figures, that's gone. Now, if the FDIC were to insure, if they were liquid enough, they have over, what is it, $8 billion that they insure, something like that. And they only have millions to cover that. So they only have about a penny for every dollar that they are supposed to insure. So, you know, again, I like to kind of put in food for thought. Interestingly enough, if one more bank in 2008 had gone under, it would have been clear that the FDIC was insolvent. Is that a coincidence? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, again, it's a confidence game. It's simply a bid dance,
right,
game.
And
end of
they
story.
Had to
yeah.
create the illusion that the FDIC had their back.
Mm-hmm. So here's my scenario, folks. And believe me, I've only been studying this for over 35 years. And I know the mindset. I know the Paul Volckers. I know how they think. And they're going to have, let's say, let's just throw a bank out, Bank of America, whatever, Wells Fargo, what have you, okay? They come and you realize, oh my goodness, something is spurring. I got to take all of my money out, or I'm going to take a penalty and withdraw my IRA. And so they start doing that across the board, and suddenly they have to say, nope, we have to take a bank holiday. We have to shut the doors because we're going to have to have a bail-in to survive. So what happens, probably over a weekend, I would say on a Friday into a long holiday, perhaps, maybe over the 4th of July, if I were to make a guess, they have this, just to avert the bank runs of the Great Depression, they close the banks up and say, and of course we have all of the talking heads on NBC and ABC and CNC and yada, yada, yada. And guess what's going to be unveiled? Well, don't worry, because cash is dirty. Cash has got COVID in it. Cash is filthy lucre. Some, you'll even have pastors getting up and saying that. We want to protect our people, because my goodness, look at all the dirty money coming out. So we have a wonderful new electronic currency called central bank digital currency. Believe me, folks, this is already, the infrastructure is already in place. They just need to have an emergency to sell it to you. They always have to have an emergency. Okay? So, I believe me, Sari, I've talked to so many people, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they're red or blue, the general consensus is, I'm okay with that. I say, what do you mean you're okay with that? I'm already, I do most of my stuff through debit card anyway, or credit card. I don't even have cash anymore. I really don't like cash. I'm okay with that. And I look at them and say, well, do you know about ESG? What do you mean ESG? I said, it's a triplet credit score. Environmental, E, social, S, governmental. If the artificial intelligence that runs the whole digital currency algorithm says, okay, you're driving a gas guzzler Suburban, and we know because you've paid so much in the gas, you're in the gas pump, you're really hurting the economy. You got a detriment score there. Oh, you're a Trump guy. You like Donald Trump? You're one of those patriot crazies? And there's another, the algorithm will score. And social, you're saying, crazy things like, oh, I listened to the story behind the story with Dr. Ott. You got a detriment score there, so you get behind a certain eight ball, and guess what? Your bank account won't work. Your digital currency won't work.
Experiment in Canada with the truckers.
Uh-huh. Exactly. It wasn't,
they were not even on a digital system, and they were able to shut them out.
I'm very close to that situation, Sari. We've had some of the organizers of this trucker, and we can have Kevin and Jim chime in here. What people don't realize is when Trudeau went nuclear and froze these honest men and women's bank accounts, because he was able to say, well, they're domestic terrorists, they're neo-Nazi, wackos, and they're enemies of the state. They froze the accounts like they would, a Vlad Putin, okay? They froze the account, and people don't know what that means. I got to tell you, I was stunned when Carl and others, I talked with them, and they said, we've got our bank accounts frozen. We're not going to be unfrozen. No, they don't get unfrozen. When the bank accounts are frozen, their bank account has zero. They have no bank account. It's done. It's bail-in time, okay? And not only that, but they had their big rigs confiscated because they had no numbers anymore. They had no driver's license. They were basically homeless bums now because they couldn't even pay their mortgages. That was nuclear on a financial scale. That was a nuke. And the other truckers saw what was happening, and they said, Oh, my goodness. I better shut my mouth and go back to business. At least I can survive. The crabs pulled the other crabs out back down into the bucket. And that's what happened. And if they can do it to the truckers, 100 truckers, they can do it to anybody listening to the show right now. That's the issue.
From what I gather, they did it to everybody. Grandma who donated $5 to her grandson.
They froze.
It was everybody.
No, they froze the donations into the GoFundMe page. They froze that out, and they temporarily suspended accounts, but they didn't freeze them. It was only the organizers that they froze, because when you go nuclear and freeze it, you lose all of it. And they didn't do it on a big scale. They just did it enough to send a shockwave message to these protesters. We have you by the short hairs, and we're twisting. And that message went out loud and clear. So you see, that's the whole issue here. We've got to tell people and understand, if you have... Listen, I got to be careful what I say, because there are, crazy enough, is there are laws. If you incite a bank run, they can arrest you for a felony. So I can't say to people outright, hey, the banks are evil and the banks are problematic. I'm just telling you what happened to truckers that I know personally, and their lives were ruined. I mean, I talked to one trucker, and he says, I got my gun and my bullets, and I'm gonna put it in my mouth here after. I says, no. And he says, my life is over. I'm done. I have no reason to live. Now that's sobering to me. It was. My heart just went out. I said, you know, golly, what can you do for people like that? He doesn't want to go live in a cardboard shack and, you know, cardboard in a city and have an open sewer for a bathroom.
No, and that's why you're doing what you're doing and I'm doing what I'm doing. We're trying to give people the knowledge and the power to make decisions.
Exactly. First hour is done. Sari, we'll hang on. We come back after these messages. This is the story behind the story. This is Dr.
Okay.
A. Truant. Sari, stay tight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on The Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B. Right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner. where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got now.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to tonight's story behind the story. Our special guest, Sari, you've been so great, gracious, and you do have a remarkable way of telling a story, and it's so gentle and so beautiful. Thank you for being our guest tonight on the show.
You are so welcome.
You know, I want to bring in our two partners in crime, James Watkins and Major Burdock. If you want to just chime in, please bring comments or questions to Sari. I wanted to kind of focus on again how this shell game works with our paper, our dollars, and what the banking con game is doing. Now, please don't take my. This is going to sound wild and crazy, but please understand it isn't. Okay. The reality is, Sari, that whenever you go in and buy a vehicle, a car, or the biggest expense most young couples do, they sign their names away on a mortgage. Mortician death contract. That's what it means, mortgage. Okay? Do you realize what really happens? Now, back before 1913, when people, community banking structure that was honest, all the people pooled their money. They, in the sense of community, they helped raise the house. A newlywed couple starting out, the community came and they everybody's funds came together to give them a start, and they paid him back as best they can. It was honest money and honest help being lent to them. But that's not the case anymore. Absolutely not the case since the 1940s. Folks, here's what happens. Under the Federal Reserve banking structure, whenever you, as a debtor, sign up a mortgage or any type of a bank loan, suddenly on the bank's ledger, that becomes an asset. Your very nature to repay that, your labor, your everything you work towards, through the interest rates that are charged, you suddenly become a debtor to a bank which provides that service, that contract, because the Federal Reserve just says they can. That's it. There's no money actually being transferred. That's the huge truth that I want to get out with, that you help you understand that. And it doesn't matter whether it's a mortgage or a car loan. The paper that's created, even when you go and use a credit card, the reality that becomes an asset to the bank. It's a piece of paper now that they can bundle up and sell for Federal Reserve notes into the deposit accounts. In other words, you have a $100,000 mortgage. You start paying on that for 2 or 3 months and season it. They, meaning the bank, bundles that up with other mortgages and go out and auction it, and they get Federal Reserve notes and other debt instruments to be able to lend, to put in their bank account and be liquid. They create the debt, which becomes an asset. Nothing was ever brought in. Nobody's money, as far as gold and silver, were ever transferred. It's electronic debit entry. It's a piece of paper. It's worthless. It's nothing. And the only way that it, you know, you pay the actual, your wealth and that they want you to believe is wealth. No gold and silver. It's all paper that you work and slave for a piece of paper to have a bank wire into your paycheck. They call it. It's all nothing but an IOUs. That's the reality that's happening. Talk about a confidence game. And so people say, well, it's a system. It works. No, it doesn't, because at the end of the day, all you're doing is your labor and your freedom are tied up to an absolute corrupt system of confidence games. Now, do you realize when you get a handle on that, you can ask the banking institution and do it through legal means. Please prove to me that you still have this, where the debt came from. Whose deposits did you use? Other people's gold and silver? No. If you know the right things to say in a letter, the constructive fraud, that's the two words you need to learn. Constructive fraud, you build a fraud. Prove to me that anybody is being hurt, because you see, the minute they sell that debenture into the secondary market and churn it, they've got the profit. They've got their currency. They've been paid for it in full. What a con game. Absolutely stunning. Are you aware of that, of how that really works, Sari?
Well, they hypothecate. That's one way they keep building their debt and building their assets. And as far as my brain is fried. I hate when I do that. You know, you hit a certain age and all of a sudden the thought disappears.
Yeah.
It comes back 5 minutes later. So I have white hair for a reason.
you're so cute. So,
well, it happens to me, you know, frequently. But the banks, yeah, I'm gonna go back and say something. There's a couple things I wanted to say, and I'm gonna use that time right now to divert attention from my forgetfulness. But people do not realize this. In March 16th, to be exact, of 2020. The perfect trifecta. COVID hit, supermarket shelves emptied, and there was a run on the banks. They were limiting what you could get out. They closed the lobbies so you couldn't get in. Wires were not being sent. There was panic. Now, a lot of people didn't know that, but the people that I work with, my clients, were panicking. And then, if you noticed, the following week, everything cleared up. And that's because the Federal Reserve says, don't worry. We got your back. Go into the little reserves that you have. Give people what they need. And then, if you noticed, and I started to keep track because somebody said something to me. So, I don't bank with Wells Fargo, but they're between my house and the farmer's market. So, I like to keep cash at home. So, I replenish my cash stash, and I like to keep a certain amount in case there is a bank holiday. And so, for 3 months, I kept track of what happened. And out of those, every Saturday, so 12 Saturdays, I would take $1,000 out of Wells Fargo. And out of that $1,000, 900 were 50s. And 10 out of 12 weeks, those 50s were all brand new, sequentially numbered, never touched by human hands.
Wow.
So money is created out of thin air. Mm-hmm. But you and I need to have those bills in our hand. That's what we've been trained. And so they just printed what we needed. Nothing backing it.
Yeah, the currency. Right out of thin air. Yeah.
Yeah. So now to go back to your question, Drew, I'm handing it back to you. Was I graceful enough?
That was fantastic. Yeah, it's a good point.
Oh, there's one other thing I want to tell you.
So yeah.
I wrote that down. I sent you a link. Oklahoma just passed a bill to help minimize the impact of central bank digital currency. You know how there's a specific coffee shop that will not accept cash anymore?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Guess what? That's illegal in Oklahoma now. They have to accept cash, and they cannot penalize you by charging you more for what you're purchasing.
Well, that particular copy shop will just leave the state because that's the part of the
that's
system.
That's their choice.
That
wouldn't bother me. I don't go in there anyway because I don't like their ethics, but that's me. I shop ethics.
Yeah, and it goes back to two things. We talk about cognitive dissonance where people just are, we become so spoiled as a society. The instant gratification is just instant now. We satisfy our needs, whether it's an espresso or latte at some fancy dancy place, and you just tap your card on it, boom, it's all done. And then what happens is, the second part of this, not cognitive dissonance, but normalcy bias. Normalcy bias is what we're talking about here. And that's simply, well, no, this just can't happen here. We're elite. We're so special. We're better than everybody else. This will never, ever happen. And when it does, it just flat out, talk about people wanting to do suicide. How could this possibly happen? It's unbelievable. It's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, it is real. And we're talking not Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Look what's happening in the nation of Israel, just to say that. The rate of vaccination is off the charts. They are going so digital, it's not even funny. And again, it just mirrors what's happening in the People's Republic of China. The environmental social scoring experimentation, the lab rats have passed with flying colors. And you know what's really scary, Sari, is the people are saying, we're going to police ourselves. We're going to keep, We're going to keep you in line. We love this. We think it's great. Don't rock any boats. And they'll get increased ESG scoring by ratting out their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
That happened
during 1933.
Yeah.
And that happened in Canada during COVID.
I also think, hello, it's Burdock here. True, one of the best things about this, if you want to see a silver coating, it all looks very ominous, but the people that you're going to be dealing with, if you want any truth and justice done, are turncoats, rats, people that have no loyalty whatsoever. And that's going to be an easy group to turn against each other. They may seem all powerful now, but once you put them in front of the public, and it will happen, and it has been happening. Look at what James O'Keefe dealt with Pfizer. He got dealt a blow, but he's coming back. And who knows? There's more of them and more of us. So if we get some law enforcement people, and unfortunately they're going to have to rat on each other, which is not behavior that I encourage, and I don't think it's commendable, but under certain circumstances, when you're talking about not only the integrity of our country, but really everything that we hold dear in the world is at stake right now, we're going to have to get dirty with these people, and it's got to spill over into the bankers as well.
And into the court systems as well. Sorry, I'm Jim. I'm jumping in on you here.
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on for a long time with the banks going out of business, and this social scoring is not new. I've had banks deplatform me since the year 1999. In my business, they go in and they, merchant banks especially, and people don't even realize that there's a difference between a merchant bank and a consumer bank, but there is. Merchants have no protection whatsoever in their banks. And they will come in and they will grab all of the merchant's cash and then close that bank down and then reopen it with a new name. This has happened to me four times in the last 25 years. And for business wise, personally, it's happened to me too. And we have to realize that it's not isolated incidents. We're, you know, I'm semi public figure here, and other public figures I've heard this happen to, like, the singer that used to be married to one of the ladies that was like a stepfather by Caitlyn Jenner, and I'm not going to say her name, but people need to realize it's real and it's serious and it's coming, and we're not just talking about it. It's happened to Yi. It's happened to my son Ronald. It's happened to me. It's happened to General Flynn. And it's happened to hundreds of thousands of other people that have no voice whatsoever, that are just completely wiped out and silent. And the minute your bank is shut off and all you have is an ATM card and 50 cents in your pocket jingling around that you can maybe put in the meter one time somewhere when you park your car and go ask the bank what happened, you're in big trouble. Because, you know, they'll mail you a check and it'll get there in 3 or 4 weeks. And then you have to go find a bank that'll open a new account for you. And they're doing this based on your political party. They're doing this based on whether you are speaking out against them, like I am right now, like you are right now. It's a terrible situation. And we have to realize it's happening to tons of people right now already, and has been. And those ones that are are not talking about it. They've been shut down so completely. It's awful. If you're living paycheck to paycheck and you got to go 4 weeks until you get your next money, or not money, currency, I'm going to use the currency word too, you're in a big trouble. You're going to be at the food banks. You're going to be asking your neighbors and your parents or whoever for help. And then you know, is your community charitable or not? It's really going to come into hand. See? Anyway, I'm just saying that you are right on target, man. But I want to give you some advice also on your memory. When you get older, it's really important not to vocalize your memory problems, even as a joke. And the reason being that, you know, we've been talking about cognitive dissonance, but really, you know, cognitive decline needs to be talked about too. And when you find yourself in that situation, it's imperative that you get some mental training and don't vocalize it, because when you vocalize it, your subconscious hears you talking, your conscious talking about it, and it takes in everything. And then your subconscious is going to be telling you, say, hey, I'm losing my memory. Hey, I'm losing my memory. Don't accept it.
Right.
And I'll be quiet. I'm sorry.
It's all good. Yeah. We've got about another half hour of the show, Sari. Let's talk solutions. You know, you said earlier in the first hour, your solutions are for everybody, no matter rich or poor. What about the people that are going from paycheck to paycheck and they don't realize that it's inflation that's eating them up? What are some ways that those people in that situation can find some relief? What do you suggest?
Part of a community garden.
Okay.
Unfortunately, when you're paycheck to paycheck, there's not much you can do. But if you have other skills, you can offer those skills in terms of barter. You can, you know, even if possible, buy an extra pound of pasta a week or a bag of dried beans, or supplement by going to a food bank and getting some of the dried foods and putting them away for tomorrow, for that rainy day. When you're paycheck to paycheck, it is a very scary thing. Look, we went bankrupt. That was very scary. I knew I wasn't going to be out on the streets. That was not the issue. The issue was total loss of pride, fear, and what am I going to do? And I've got a master's. I could do anything. But it's still is paralyzing. When you're in that position, you have to think outside the box. What can I do? How can I help my family? What can I do different? And you look around you, and there are a lot of things that you can do. And one of them is, thank you very much, a very positive attitude.
Indeed. Let me just add to that, if I could. When you look at what makes society viable, we all have different skill sets. We all have different talents. That's the beauty of diversity, really. So you look in. That's what I was telling my trucker friend in Canada. I says, don't give up. Don't ever, ever, ever give up. Just sit back and realize that. It may seem really dark right now, but sometimes it's darkest before the dawn. Find out, assess what you're good at. What makes you tick? Are you good as a good mechanic? Whatever your skill set is, that's what makes you viable. It's your labor that you're able to bring to the table. And that's always an asset that will be rewarded, always. And see, that's what's so heinous about this entire structure, Sari, in my opinion, it dehumanizes people. They live in, like I said, we call it paycheck to paycheck, because they lost confidence in who they are. They don't know that they're loved and cherished as a member of society. And the bad thing is there's too many people, frankly, that are predators. Becoming more and more a predatory structure. That
law is pushing it that way. Don't you know? Mm-hmm. You have protection for loans with these banks by law. They have to give you a loan if you qualify. They don't have to give you a bank account, though. And they can turn your bank account off. And there's no law protecting you on that.
You know, I got such a kick out of during, speaking of the COVID years, so-called, that we got, first, remember those little debit cards you got? They mailed out, I don't know if you got some, but I got them. And, you know, it just made me so mad seeing those stupid little credit cards, debit cards. Mm-hmm. And then they get transfer payments, you know, coming in. You know what I did with mine? I sent them back. I says, take this and shove it. Don't send me any more of this stuff. My sweetheart, my wife says, well, I'm spending mine. I said, you can do what you want with yours. But for me, I am, she says, you're just too independent. I says, no, I am not taking the government tit and putting it in my mouth. It ain't happening. Take it back, do whatever you want with it, but not me. I'm not cashing this nonsense. And I'm not going to use, I cut the stupid debit card up and send it back to them. That's just me, you know, but it just infuriated me because even my sweetheart was like, well, it's a free Sunday at this, no, honey.
Nothing's free.
It just massively increases the cumulative debt we owe and makes the future dollars worthless. I saw it all, and I said, my goodness, what a mess. And look, you know, Lynette's charts show this, don't they? I mean, the huge spike in the money supply.
And these are not her charts. These are the Federal Reserve charts. These are the Bank of International Settlement charts, the IMF charts. These are not her charts. She's data gal because she only uses their data.
Good point. Thanks for yeah, exactly. I call them her charts because
she explains
them to so well. Yes, it's stunning. And when people see this, you know, it's setting us up for the final countdown, the great reset, where you'll own nothing. Well, you'll not even own yourself.
Well, somebody will own something. Wealth never disappears.
Exactly.
If I don't own the house that I'm living in, somebody else will own it. And actually, I never really own it because I still have property taxes.
Right. And again, it goes back to the very definition of money, gold. But let's just talk about the nature of gold. You know, hey, Sari, can you go out and contract somebody to go manufacture some gold for you in a laboratory somewhere?
Can't.
Why not?
They cannot replicate it.
Why not?
They've tried. No replication. They can't.
Hmm.
Just can't.
So can you destroy it?
No. But I did eat it once.
Ha! Well, you know, I have a mineral.
Over in France.
Mm-hmm. I have a mineral called, it's liquid mineral gold. We actually, believe it or not, folks, we use 99.99% gold coins to produce our gold supplement. Mm-hmm. And let me just toot my own horn here a little bit. Gold has incredible medicinal values.
Yes.
Do you know that? It's amazing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so does silver, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Antibacterial, antiviral, antiparasitical. And what gold does for the dream state, the deep REM sleep, and where you can actually repair and regenerate DNA through deep REM sleep cycles, that's gold. Mm-hmm. Just after, oh, I probably broke about four or five laws by claiming, you know, what a mineral can do for you medicinally. But you know what? It's the truth. Okay. Why is gold valuable, Sari?
Because you work for it. You have to dig it out of the ground. It is labor intensive. And so you use that to trade your labor for real money labor.
Very well said. Ladies and gentlemen, gold is a measurement. That's really what it is. It's a, because of its very nature, you can heat it and get it to a certain level, becomes liquid, but you keep getting it more and more and more hot, it just stays, it just doesn't change. It's eternal. It's kind of like our Savior. I'm a believer. I believe that there was Yahushua Messiah was real and still is there in charge of the unseen realms. I'm sorry, the Bible is correct, it's true, it's a historical text. And this individual from Nazareth was real. Nazareth, the carpenter, he's very, very real and very personal. But listen to me. Like, it represents him. The Hebrew word for gold is zahab. Zahab, Z-A-H-A-B. The three Paleo-Hebrew letters that make up that word, Zahab, literally means the covenant, coming one who will be pierced for our sins and coming from the house of bread, Bethlehem. That's literally what those three letters absolutely come to mean. So the covenant, and just like, okay, it's eternal. You can't destroy it. You can only, if you burn it through a refining fire, it just becomes purer. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't even nuke it. It's eternal. That's a symbol. That's a covenant that we look for to the one who was crucified for us. Now, that's kind of cool, I think, because man doesn't make gold. Our Creator did. Our Creator made Zahab. We can't. It's valuable because it was ordained with the covenant to the covenant people from Abraham that it would be the measurement of wealth. It's what the value is of a lamb, a sheep, a bushel of wheat, a day's labor. That's what makes it valuable. Nothing more, nothing less. It's a store of wealth. It's a measurement of wealth, folks. And silver, to a lesser degree, because it's less value, as the sun has an energy, so does the moon. The sun is represented by gold, and the moon is silver. So it's the same thing. It's true. Silver can only be, the hotter it gets, the more refined it, the impurities all go away, but the silver becomes purer and purer and purer. There's a reason for that. It's ordained that way. That's why it's so valuable. I got to tell you, down at the bottom of the Florida Keys, there's a shipwreck called the Atosha. A guy named Mel Fisher in the 80s discovered this, and so cool to watch those videos. Here he's down, and this has been in the salt water, corrosive, since 1622. That's when the Atosha went down, the year 1622. So in 1985, here Mel Fisher's down there, and the gold coins and the gold chains are just as beautiful and shiny as the day they went in. Isn't that just amazing what gold does?
You cannot destroy it.
Yeah. That's why it's valuable. See? So, what can any individual dude listening that has a nest egg that they think it's okay to keep it in the bank, drawing a little bit of nominal interest, and it's called an IRA or retirement account. What would you suggest? Keep it in Federal Reserve notes or what?
Having gone through a bankruptcy very late in life and starting a new career at 67 with just the roof over my head, I am very, very possessive of what I have. I work hard for it. I keep minimal cash in the bank. I do have cash at home. And the rest I have in precious metals. Because the one thing that I do know is that gold and silver will never go to zero. They may be worth more or they may be worth less, depending on what's going on. But they will never go to zero. And they told me fiat's going to zero. It's on that purchasing power chart of the consumer dollar. Know it. So why would I keep my hard-earned labor payment, what I'm paid for, why would I keep that in an intangible product that's losing value when I can keep it in a tangible product that will never go to zero? And, you know, people say, well, why would you put it into gold? It's not earning you interest. No, it's not. It's not making you any money. And hell, look at the, pardon my French, heck, look at the spot price of gold. It's not going anywhere. Well, I beg to differ with you. In 2015, the spot price, which is just a paper contract, it's not physical gold, but the spot price in 2015 was, let's get my glasses on, $1,160 average for the year. Do you know what the average was in 2022? $2,000 a year average. So I think that is in a positive upward trend.
Again, but it's been...
Being manipulated and controlled. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, now look at it this way. It's on sale. It's a bargain. It's well below its true value.
Exactly.
We and all like a sale.
The measurement of it is based on currency, which is worthless paper. That's what's so bizarre. People need to realize that it's, you know, wow. It just shows that the true value of the dollar is tanked when it doubles and goes in the value like that.
And here's how you can explain that. In the olden days, a nugget of gold would buy a great suit of armor. In the 1920s, a $20 gold coin, about an ounce of gold, would buy a really good men's suit. Well, I walked into an Italian men's clothing store, and guess what I could get for an ounce of gold? A really good men's suit. The gold is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It holds your purchasing power over time so that what you could get yesterday, you can get tomorrow, and you can get a year from now. The difference is the number of worthless fiat dollars that it takes to buy that ounce of gold. It still buys the exact same thing. And the one thing that we've been trained to do is we've been trained as a society to be afraid of missing out. So we don't want to miss out on that stock market high. We are afraid we're not going to be able to buy that house at that high. So we run and we do that when it's high. Everything has a cycle. It's infinity figure eight. It's either undervalued, fairly valued, or overvalued. What the wealthy do best is they can spot an undervalued asset. They buy it because they can afford to hold on to it. When that undervalued asset, becomes overvalued, that's when they liquidate it. And guess who's buying that overvalued asset? You and I, because we're panicking. We're afraid we can't get it. Who's buying that undervalued asset? That's called the accumulation phase. You always want to accumulate an undervalued asset that is in a positive upward trend. Now, do you want tangible, something that you can touch and feel and hold? Or do you want intangible that you have no control over? Bank of International Settlement says it very clearly. Gold held at home has no geopolitical risk and no counterparty risk. You hold it, you own it.
Yep, exactly right.
Give me tangible. Give me tangible right now. I had intangible, and I had a great, great toy store. We were known nationally. 40 years run. But we were small, and we were chosen to lose. So now I look at what they do. I watch what they do. And I listen to what they say. And I know that most of what they say is what they want us to hear, not what they want us to do.
Well, okay, yeah, that's exactly it. So the focus of ITM is, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you kind of really focus on pre-1933 U.S. coins primarily.
The reason we do, now we do all precious metals. But the reason we do is when you look at the rules and you look at what the wealthy is doing, you say, well, there's a reason. And part of it is, number one, in 1933, William J. Wooten was a coin collector. So rare and unusual coins of special interest to collectors are exempt from confiscation or recall. The wealthy got their gold out of the country prior to the confiscation. After the confiscation, they destroyed everything that they confiscated, and they had stopped minting the double eagles. So now everything over in Europe was rare and unusual. They're an antique. So the wealthy could bring their gold back into the country. You and I spent the 5 ounces we were able to keep because we needed it to live on. So the wealthy brought it back as an antique. They could buy and sell and trade. It was no longer legal tender, so it was not monetary. It's now a collectible. Can they change the rules? Yes. But I think that the person who paid $18.9 million for the only 1933 St. Gaudens coins in circulation, I don't think they're going to want a rule passed that's not going to allow them to use their wealth. And not only that, then you take it a step further, and in March 29th of 2021, Congressman Mooney of West Virginia reintroduced the Sound Money Bill. What is the Sound Money Bill? It wants to do away with all federal taxation on the gains when you liquidate gold and silver coins and bullion. Now, it didn't pass the first time. Many people think it will not pass this time. Last time I looked, it only had a 3% chance of passing. But I do believe that when I woke up that one morning and said, "Holy Toledo, it's going to pass." I believe something told me in the middle of the night, something, someone, somebody, that it's going to pass because the wealthy know they're getting ready to use their gold. And everybody pays taxes. It's the honor system when it comes to the pre-33. Everyone pays their fair share of taxes. It's your job and my job to report to the tax man for pre-33. Yep. So they don't want to pay the taxes, just like you and I don't want to pay taxes.
Right.
Let's just change the rules. So if they change the rules to benefit them, if we're holding the same type of gold that they're holding, I think I stand to benefit from that.
So how much silver do you actually do, and what do you focus with the silver?
I have a lot of silver. But I look at silver more as a tool of barter, because silver is worth so much less than gold. Gold is the primary monetary metal. Silver is the secondary. It's also industrial. So I look at silver really as a tool of barter. What happens if we become a Venezuela and our dollars have no value? If you walk into a store, by law, they're going to have to take it because it's the legal tender of the state. But let's just say you walk into a market and you're holding a dime, which is an old dime, which is 90% silver, and you're holding a $10 bill. Now, if we're in hyperinflation, which is 50% increase year over year, and we're on computers, if things move quickly, boom, it's a push of a button, and that price for that loaf of bread can change in a heartbeat. So you have a $10 bill, and I have that dime, and we can both buy that loaf of bread for $10. By the time we walk up to the cash register, maybe it went to $11. Well, your $10 is still 10. But my dime, because gold and silver are a hedge against inflation, and it keeps up with inflation, so my dime now, instead of being 10, is now worth 11. I can still buy that loaf of bread.
Right.
It holds its value over time. God forbid we become a Venezuela. A dime can feed a family of four on rice and beans for about a month.
Yeah, one little thin dime. I've told a few institutions that have been focusing on, you know, the 1 ounce silver rounds. I said, you really are missing the boat not to do a dime and a quarter, following the grains of silver needed of pure silver as following the 1792 Coinage Act. You need to make them smaller so that a dime can be exchanged.
And what people don't realize is you want recognized legal tender, even though it's now a piece of silver that you're using. If you walk into a Walmart, will they recognize and be able to use a 1/10 ounce silver round? Maybe, maybe not. But they will recognize that dime very easily.
Hopefully, they're not going to give you the value of the silver pre-1965.
They will. If you're using that dime to buy and we're in a barter situation, that dime will be weighed and converted into fiat so they know. The reason they weigh it is there's 14, if the dimes were brand new silver dimes. 14 dimes is a troy ounce. And these dimes are 90% silver. All the silver coinage, 64 and older, is 90% silver, universal. So they will take that dime because there is wear and tear on the dimes. They call it junk for a reason. It's been well-loved, used, and abused. So they'll take that dime and they'll put it on the scale and they will weigh that dime. And just like a hand of bananas, it tells you how many dollars that hand of bananas cost. That scale will tell you how many dollars that dime is worth. And so you'll have, if you buy junk, you'll have some that look really good. You'll have some that look really bad because it does wear away and you never want to clean it.
Yeah.
But you want that recognized legal tender. And the reason you want the small parts, as someone so innocently said to me, well, I have all these silver eagles. I'll just go get more food. Well, what if we're on rationing?
Mm-hmm.
What if there is nothing to get? And they won't give you change. If they do, it'll be in the fiat that somebody gave them because they don't want the fiat. Because tomorrow when they go to buy that loaf of bread again, it's going to cost more. They can't use the fiat. Or they'll be out of business.
I understand. I saw a video from, and this is in a big, Tehran, Iran square. They're burning pallets of U.S. dollars. I mean, just burning them up. Mm-hmm. Whereas 4 years ago, they were hoarding them. It was very valuable, but Mm-hmm. Whatever is happening, it's not. I've never seen them burning. They may burn American flags, but they don't burn the dollars. But now they're doing just the opposite. It's incredible, guys. Anything that's, we're rapidly wrapping out of, getting out of time. We're gonna just a few more minutes. Anything else you're gonna want to bring out and have Sari comment on?
Yeah, it just seems to me that maybe hedging, a good hedge would be to put yourself into a position of maybe owning a pawn shop. If this is the direction everything's going, the pawnbrokers are going to make out.
Maybe.
And, you know, if as long as they've got a ready, steady supply of maybe some food, they know how to fish and know how to grow onions, which we are still lacking over here. But, yeah, you don't know how bad it's going to get and who's in control of these commodities. I understand tomatoes are now the thing. We went through some terrible stuff with onions. Onions, I'm telling you. A most outrageous thing happened here. No exports. Everything was just shut down. We ran out the entire country. And so they're playing around with the food supply as well. So just a couple of thoughts on that.
Well,
you know what?
Major Burdock, independent.
You've been talking about this social credit scoring for a long time now, and I didn't know what was happening to me, and I realize now it's social credit scoring. But you're the expert on it. Why don't you talk more on that?
Well, basically, I mean, a lot of it it's been going on for a long time, but the people that really enabled the largest system in place, which is currently running in China, was Google. It was Project Dragonfly. And we've verified that it does exist. Google only admitted to it after people who were persecuted by it actually became dissidents and started talking to the press, which it naturally suppressed everything. But these people learned that there's other people who are willing to speak out, tell the truth. And so they just changed the name of it, and it's going forward in full speed, and it's been happening for, I think, certainly over 15 years now. They've been having databases. They've had databases in place before, but integrating them all and assigning every single, identify and assign every single citizen a score. And that's going to make sure that you have the fear of God, so to speak, in you. If your score isn't high enough, you can't travel, even domestically. You can't get married. You can't get a bank account. You can't get a job. You can't get an education. And if you change your ways, don't speak out about the government and do whatever they say, and they're confident that you will recruit people in foreign countries to do the same, then you can travel to foreign countries and have a bank account, maybe have a two-bedroom apartment. And that's just how they want it to work. And to me, that is that's people have attempted to do that before. It's dystopian. It all goes one way. And certainly, if anyone's read the Bible, it is very well chronicled in Revelation. That is the mark of the beast.
Well, it's definitely points to that direction. So again, we go back to what Sari is saying with her experience. Gold is king. It is something you should have as much as you can. And even if if everybody can have some gold, whether it's even jewelry. You know, jewelry becomes very valuable too, you know, in a very real sense. And 51% of the world's gold still today is in jewelry. It's pretty much amazing where it goes. Only 17% is actually going into coinage and or monetary supply. So,
There's only about 2%, 1-2% in the collectible gold. That's it.
There you go.
Very small percentage. And we know that people like what is very limited and rare.
So, yeah, you know, it's pretty, I'll just say this in closing, where, you know, there's a substance called electrum, okay, which is gold mixed with basically copper, because when you have copper and gold blended, it has an electrical conductivity that's pretty much massive. And copper is in a way like gold too. Once you heat it to a certain degree, the electrum, the copper will separate out, and copper is a metal too that is special on the periodic table for special reasons. But yeah, when you look at how you can combine these, and the ancient ones did this, you know, Sari, they found electrum coins clear back into ancient Egypt. They didn't want, for some reason, pure gold. They wanted electrum, which is a combination of gold and copper. Just saying, there's things that we've had in our antiquity and our gene pool as human beings that we know that gold is intrinsically valuable. We just kind of have forgotten it, haven't we? Been brainwashed away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Learn about
gold doesn't do anything. Look at it. It doesn't pay you interest.
Ah. It's interesting.
It's not valuable. Yeah,
but
it
only,
doesn't pay
yeah.
you interest.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's really the point that we need to make with this. It's not about return on investment, ROI. That's paper. That's usury. It's devilish. We're out of time. Sari, thank you so much.
Let me say this one more thing. Gold is interest. And not interest. Gold is insurance.
Insurance.
It covers everything. If you lose it, you'll never lose value in gold.
Kerry, real quickly, how can people get a hold of you? How can they contact you if they want to help you?
Sarit, Sarit, @itmtrading.com.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Be well. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what...